Blog Talk Radio.
As the specter of the gruesome Clinton, Hillary, begins to arise over the landscape, and watching the recallers fight for every square inch of land in this Dona Ana County, and coming to you from a small, rebuilt, double-insulated, single-wired, single-wide trailer. Kelly O'Connell, good morning to you. It was a heck of a show yesterday. Woo! Had Steve on, had Bob Endlich, had another guest that I didn't even mention, but it was a friend of mine who sat in, and he had gotten his career after the military through something that Steve Pierce had put together, which I had wished that we'd mentioned, but it was just things were happening too fast, and there were extra people that couldn't even fit into the studio, so it was pretty fun. And good to hear from Steve and what's going on. Ask him some inside baseball stories from or questions from D.C. All right. Today is the 11th, and it is March, of course, 2015. And get you your temperature here. Oh, my gosh. It hasn't defaulted to Randlett, Utah. 38 degrees. Pretty warm out there. I would think that winter pretty much is done. I've got plants blooming in my front yard, which would seem to confirm this. And I don't know if they got their 2 inches. I'll have to try to look it up. I don't think they did get their 2 inches to set the record in Boston, but it was one heck of a winter back east. And it's probably still not over from what I had seen from the weather reports. All right, there's a story today. I got Pete. Pete is calling in, and then I got Ben Rawson coming in. Pete is calling in. Pete, as you know, my friend from Florida that I've battled with many times, many, many times. And he and I are close. I was the only friend at his wedding, which is didn't say much for him, does it? But he and I have gone back and forth on Obama, but he called me up and said, you know what? I got some tough words to say about Islam. Like, wow, okay. So he wanted to, or I think I suggested to him, would you like to come on the air and give your opinion on it? Now, don't forget, he was in the Marines, and they had actually asked him to go to Guantanamo Bay and act as a legal representative. He is an attorney, and he does, he is actually working, I think, in property law back in Florida. So to go from being in the Marines to that is a little transition, but he was a JAG. Anyway, he's a good guy, real good-hearted guy. All right. I've got the story here that I think is even bigger than it's playing out on the front page. Hillary Clinton, when she went in to be the Secretary of State, bought her own, basically created her own, I don't want to call it a website because it was bigger than a website. She had a website, but she had her own server, meaning she had her own computers, basically, that ran her website and kept it online and everything. And she had the memory, the hard drives, And they were basically, she said, claims that they were watched over by the Secret Service. That may be nominally true, but they were not really watched over by the Secret Service. They were watched over by the Clintons, whatever hench people they had around there. And so they asked her to give her email. Here's the story. There's two stories here. Number one, the government, in its ultimate wisdom, decided to not mention that Hillary had created her own website, her own email account that she owned that was in a server. In other words, the memory for it was in her house. The hard drive was driven out of her house. And the government never told anybody about this. Obama pretended he had just found out about it, about himself. He gets a lot of mileage out of playing possum, you know, playing dumb. But the issue was, number one, for her to create her own empire, her own kingdom of email. That's one issue. Which would seem to really, although they say it wasn't illegal, we're not talking about using somebody else's email account, you know, Yahoo or Gmail, whatever. We're talking about somebody creating their own servers so that they could keep all of their emails, the institutional history of the emails, in under their own control. So she has admitted to having given up half of the emails that she created, about 30,000. There's many, many questions here. The main one, though, is the idea that a person who's employed by the United States government, no matter how important, how powerful, how famous they are, the idea that they give themselves the right to own their own email when they're working for the government, I think it's just absolutely, totally illegal. The idea of it, whether it's against the law or not. And the fact that she then takes, you know, obviously doesn't take control, has control from the very beginning. This is her plan from the very beginning. This is damage control. She gives up half. Somebody went through her emails and supposedly got rid of half the personal emails, which she said, well, I'm not going to turn in my emails from Chelsea's wedding planning. I mean, my response to that is, it goes without saying that you would hand them all over. If you're creating your own private government email system, hand them all over. I mean, she says she didn't send any classified information in the emails. Really? What do you do as the Secretary of State? Are all of the things that are shared from your mouth? Are they spoken? Are they typed up? That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that the President Obama would say that he didn't know about this, when if you got an email from somebody in high office, vice president, you're the president, you get an email from the vice president, secretary of state, United Nations secretary, I mean, fill in the blank there, secretary of treasury, and you notice, as you would immediately, that it doesn't come from a government account, the first thing you're going to consider is whether it is fake, right? So there had to be some communications early on, and it's stated in the Drudge that it was well known that she had done this. So the president continues to lie to the American people. I think that's the biggest it's the biggest disrespect one person can do to another is to lie to their face. And I think the president does that all the time. I think the president laughs at Americans. It's like this guy that got up and said that we had to lie to Americans because to get them to accept the truth. The guy that was head of Obamacare. Anyway, so Hillary owns all these emails, and she owns the emails, and then she's going to decide which emails are important and has destroyed the rest. The hard drive according to the New York Times, is probably destroyed. Now, how does that make you feel? Let me ask you this. Do you want a person who makes those kind of choices in the White House? Does Hillary, 523-1450, the clear message that I get from this is that Hillary believes she's not only above the law, but she's above the process. She creates her own universe. And then she tells other, she condescends, you know, Hillary's a very condescending person. She talks down to people and says, mind your business. I've turned in everything I needed to. I followed the law. Then she has these little minions like Lanny Davis come along and lie for her and make the most outrageous claims. So I think this is just my opinion, and I've been wrong before, but after saying that she had complied with the law, after getting in trouble with Benghazi, and then now we find out that she certainly didn't share all the Benghazi emails, how could she have? Who's deciding which emails are important and which aren't? She is. They say the circus is back in town. I believe this will keep her from being president. I think, as Danisa has said, the trust factor is gone. And Charles Hurt, who he writes at the Washington Times, is a conservative journalist, wrote something that Hillary Clinton's press performance Tuesday afternoon was truly everything Americans could have hoped for from our former first lady. We got a phone call here. Modern Joan of Arc, Lady Macbeth, Senate carpetbagger, an eternal public woman scorned. She was everything she has ever been, always was, and ever will be. She is a complete hoax in a lot of people's minds. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Antonio. Good morning.
Good morning. God bless you, Antonio. What's going on?
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about Hillary and this transparent administration. They're all a bunch of liars from the top down. And what a disgrace that she's taking money from the radical Muslims in the Middle East. And isn't there a clip somewhere where she ordered her staff not to use private emails,
Twitter.
But then she doesn't?
Yeah, that's. Let me see if I can find that. She said something on Twitter to share everything. I mean, clearly, if any group of people stands for the proposition, do as I say and not as I do, it would be the Clintons.
Yes. So keep up the good work and have a good day. God bless you.
Thanks. You too, Antonio. All right, folks, let's take a little break here. I'll try to find that clip, but I got, we're talking about the history of country music, and I've got Floyd Kramer, and I've got him. Floyd Kramer is considered to be the greatest, or let's just say, I don't know if he's the greatest, but he's the most influential piano player. He's the one who did the drop note, that characteristic kind of slip piano note that you hear in country music everywhere came out of his piano. Although he said he was trained to do that by a blues player on one of the sessions he did. He was a sessions player. He did his own songs too. Last Date was a big seller.
2-in-1s with Windows or a laptop.
And, pardon me there. Here is Last Date. Kelly O'Connell 619 got Pete calling in a few minutes and Ben Rossin at the break of the hour. He's got, I believe, we've got, what's his name? Johnny Cash is introducing him.
Chet Atkins brought Floyd to Nashville and encouraged him to develop his own style of playing. This style became evident in 1960 with a record that's become an American musical classic. Welcome to Country Gold, Floyd Kramer's Last Date. Thank you.
right, so we got my buddy Pete calling in, and people usually react pretty strongly to him. I think he's good on the radio, although he just stirred up great hatred in me when he called me up the night of the re-election of a Barack Obama and said, "I told you so." And I screamed at him, "Don't ever call me again," and hung up. Very mature, huh? All right, so anyway, we kind of papered that over. All right, so I've got a number of clips here. I'm looking at which ones. All right, here. Well, let's just play a couple of Hillary. I want you to understand how big this is. It is extraordinary. It'll give you my interpretation. You know, they want cops to wear these lapel cams so they can take pictures, especially if there's a shooting or anything. This would be like a cop having his own private lapel cam, and after shooting saying, these are the pictures, this is the footage I'm releasing, everything else is private. That's my take on it. This is from ABC News.
With that breaking news overnight, the New York Times revealing that Hillary Clinton used only a private email account, not a government account, as Secretary of State. Let's go straight to John Carl at the White House. And John, the Clinton team says she preserved and turned over all the emails required by law. But this report does raise questions about security and transparency.
It sure does, George, and it will also likely become a big issue in the upcoming presidential campaign. This morning, Hillary Clinton is in the hot seat after bombshell revelations first reported by the New York Times overnight. The Times reports Clinton exclusively used a personal email account to conduct government business as Secretary of State, noting she didn't even have a government email address during her four-year tenure. State Department officials confirm this is true.
It is very unusual for a high-level official to solely use a private email account to transact government business.
I, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
That raises serious issues. For one, federal...
We've got a call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah, briefly, I'm in the middle of this clip here, but what's going on?
No, I just felt prompt to call you. I was so privileged when I was still living in Pennsylvania to boo Hillary when she was going down Main Street in a St. Patrick parade.
Oh, yeah? Did you raise the toast? Deborah, did you raise some green beer to her?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought I'd just share that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot. I'm not sure what she just said, but I believe she had the ability or the opportunity maybe to salute Hillary with a middle finger. Anyway, here we go.
Federal law requires that all official communications, including email, must be preserved by the government to allow future access for historians, journalists, and for Congress. The Times reports the emails first came to light as a result of a special congressional committee investigating the 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. Overnight, the State Department told ABC News Clinton did hand over tens of thousands of emails at their request late last year. But the Times reports Clinton's advisors reviewed those emails first, picking and choosing which ones to send. And legality isn't the only issue. There's also security. Was Clinton's private email account encrypted against possible security breaches? Overnight, Jeb Bush tweeted, quote, "Transparency matters. Unclassified Hillary Clinton emails should be released." In response to the Times story, a Clinton spokesperson said that she abided by both the letter and spirit of the law. And George, while her emails were not preserved at the time by the government, the spokesperson said that Mrs. Clinton preserved her own emails, and when asked, years after she left the State Department, she did turn over those emails.
This is one of the craziest stories I've ever heard in my life. And the fact that people are not it just totally outraged in demanding that she not run for office, I think it explains everything about the trouble we're in. Here's CNN.
You probably heard by now.
This is, by the way, this clip is entitled How Hillary Clinton's Private Email Server Worked, just so you understand a little better.
You probably heard by now Hillary Clinton never had a State Department email address. She only had a personal one, one so personal that she kept an email computer server registered to her home in Chappaqua, New York. Why would she do that? We'll get to that later. Let's start with how. First, you buy a computer. Then you do some insanely difficult network programming. You need to download special software and start tinkering with your computer's software ports, like the simple mail transfer protocol. Then you need to connect to something called a local host database, rename the configuration files, open them up with a text editor, and start changing values, entering the proper domain name, SMTP server address, IMAP server address, you get the idea. Or use a data center. Either way, unless Clinton is a secret tech guru, she probably didn't do this on her own. There are only two kinds of people who want a private email server: IT geeks and the people who worry about governments and companies spying on their mail. When you sign up for personal email accounts, your messages are normally kept on computer servers at giant data centers owned by companies like Google and Yahoo. The same is true for your work email. In Clinton's case, her emails should have lived on computer servers at the State Department, except they didn't. Now to the why. It's more private. That's it. Anyone who wants Clinton's emails will have to go through her first.
You can't go through her because she destroyed the hard drive. Don't you get it? She can say anything she wants about her emails because she chose which ones to release. Even though they're government email, they are government property. Those emails are government property. The ones she claimed that were private that she destroyed are also government I would argue, because she used her own account to create all of her emails. Therefore, they are by default government property. All right, here's it. We'll take a break here, and we'll be back. I think Pete will be calling in just a minute. We're going to talk about militant Islam, or is it all of Islam? That's Pete's argument. Be right back.
Hillary Clinton won a do-over. Benghazi Select Committee Chair Representative Trey Gowdy joins us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Senator.
Folks, we got Pete calling in here. We got Pete calling in here, and got Pete in the house. And good morning, Pete. How you doing?
Good, Kelly. How are you?
Not too bad. And okay, so Pete and I, Pete's my buddy from Florida. We've had our ups and downs. They've all been related to politics, of course. And I was just mentioning earlier, I was the only person at your wedding. I was the only friend at your wedding, of course.
Yeah, I know. It was a bit of a shotgun experience. I was had a weekend to get married, and I really appreciate you being there.
Well,
meant a lot to me.
I had to hold your hand a little bit, but I was going to say I was your only friend there, which doesn't speak highly of your group of friends, I guess.
I know. Well, it was kind of short. I was up in Rhode Island at the time, and my now wife was down in Miami, so we had to plan around a pretty interesting schedule. But I do appreciate you being there.
I really appreciated getting the invitation. And where were we when? Where was the wedding at? I'm trying to remember.
It was at the Spanish monastery in Miami. What part of Miami is it? I think it's Miami Shores. I think.
Yeah. So anyway, it was absolutely beautiful. I mean, it was just a perfect setting because it kind of had this old feel and stuff, and it a lot of stone and everything. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, for short notice, they put together a pretty quick, pretty nice setup for us.
Yeah, it was good. And you guys are still married, and you got a couple of kids now, and you're out of the Marines and practicing law over in Florida and doing mostly property law.
Yeah, I do a lot of litigation involving homeowners claims, a lot of insurance claims, health insurance, life insurance. So So it's good because my defendant is always a big bad corporation, and that seems to play very well in front of juries.
Well, that's good to hear. That's comforting. All right, so you and I were talking, and you said something to me that kind of blew me away about Islam. You'd been doing some research and had come to the conclusion that the separation, explain to me if I'm mistaken, but the separation between radical Islam and Islam itself may be artificial.
Well, you know, I was very concerned when I first, you know, found out about ISIS, you know, their big move to power last summer. The things they were doing, I mean, you could see the videos on LiveLeaks and YouTube. I mean, they were hunting down people, executing them. I mean, the very brutal way they gained power kind of shocked me because, you know, we've always understood, you know, wars have to be won. If you're going to take land and hold land, you have to win the hearts and minds, right? And these guys were just so brutal that I thought, you know, people are going to reject this because, you know, their brutality seems to know no ends. And, you know, you come to find out some of their own men are executed because they smoke cigarettes, or one guy, one of their warriors gets caught stealing, he gets his hands chopped off. I mean, these things just seem so brutal and barbaric, you would say ultimately this thing is going to burn itself out. So I really didn't understand ISIS and the caliphate and their brand or version of Islam. So, and the media, is, as you know, really doesn't help. I mean, they just kind of paint them in the picture of every terrorist that's out there, you know, some deranged Muslim or some Muslim who has been radicalized. That's the term they use, and they never explain that term. So I started doing some research and read some articles. And really, where you get to the heart of it is you listen to these interviews of the Muslims who live in places like Australia and England who support ISIS. They don't support it openly because I think once they do that, then they can be arrested. But it's very clear in their interviews how much they support this brand of Islam. They just don't come out and say it, but it's obvious. I guess you just listen for 2 or 3 minutes and you get where they're coming from. But they pointed out that ISIS is the pure form of Islam. It's the purest form. And they cite to a lot of examples. And you see in these interviews people who have some expertise on Islam, you know, Westerners who have some expertise, you can't fool with these guys. I mean, they go through the Quran, and these guys point out left and right how this form of Islam, you know, is supported by the text. So that leads you to believe that, well, this starts to kind of make sense to me why so many people are going from the Western world or from various parts of the Middle East or even Indonesia to join ISIS, because ISIS has now established what they call the caliphate, which is this Islamic state. It's very pervasive in their end of times you know, predictions, if you will, of how the end times are going to come. The caliphate's going to be reestablished. The actual, you know, head of the caliphate, this individual, who I think we've all seen, you know, in his one famous speech, there's only going to be 2 or 3 more of these leaders, so to speak, before the end of the world. So if someone, you know, maybe not a Muslim is not very well versed in the text or the prophecies, if they listen to the Islamic teachings from the Islamic State and they check them out on their own, they're going to check out with the Muslim text, with the Quran, with the prophecies. So that's why I think we have all these people going there, and the brutality is, you know, they explain the brutality. They're brutal because they want to have their enemies fear them. They want to have their enemies give up. They want to show that they must be joined by others. So it leads to this belief, I think kind of what your point is, it leads to this belief, well, if this is what they're saying true Islam is, doesn't this put what we would call a moderate Muslim in a real predicament? I mean, you have people who espouse the Western ideas, tolerance, things of that nature. But now you have this teaching that if you are a true Muslim, you have to join us. You have to pledge your allegiance to the caliphate. And to me, that creates this real interesting dynamic, and we'll see how it plays out over the next couple of years while we have to, we and other, Western countries try to root out this caliphate. What happens to the Muslims that we have in the West?
All right, Pete, take a breath there. Take a breath. You're kind of force-feeding the listener. Hold on a second here. Now, are you saying there are no moderate Muslims, or are you saying that moderate Muslims are not actually Muslim? What's the point? Don't be afraid to say. I mean, you're living all the way across the country, so don't be afraid to make your point.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I can say that. I'm not a Muslim, right? But everything that I see from the outside looking in, it'd be very hard to be a moderate Muslim in this time. That's what my point is.
But I would just, what I hear you saying is that moderate Muslims, liberal Muslims are not Muslim, that you have stated, I don't want to hold you to the implications of your statements. You have stated that ISIS does not deviate from historic Islam.
Right. I agree. As a non-Muslim, I can't say, and this is what they clearly say, I can't say who's a Muslim and who isn't. That's what they've given Obama such a hard time about in his speeches, saying it's non, this brand of Islam is not Islam. It's a perversion of Islam.
What do you think of that? What do you think of these politicians standing up repeatedly? These politicians are standing up and speaking for Islam and saying this is not Islam. This is not the real Islam. Aren't they suffering from the same problem that you're talking about? That they don't have the insider's view?
Right. I don't think they can say that, A, because they're not Muslim. I mean, this is a unique scenario, because if one Muslim calls another Muslim a non-Muslim or calls them an apostate, now, under the law, that's reason for execution. I mean, if you call someone an apostate and they're not, now you are up for execution. That's how brutal and barbaric it appears to be at times.
So, is it possible there is no moderate Islam?
It's completely possible. I mean, when you look at until I see a moderate Muslim go head to head with one of these clerics and defeat them on their own ground using the Quran, using the text, I would say these guys, these clerics, these guys who are essentially have their allegiance to the caliphate. I mean, I would say their version of Islam is the correct one, because it sticks. It's strict construction, strict interpretation of Islam.
It sounds like we could have a reality show here. Who's the real caliph?
I know, that'd be great.
Hey,
you could do that.
Pete, do you have time to stay on? We got a couple of ads here. You want to stay on, or do you need to leave?
No, I could stay on. Absolutely.
All right, let me put you on hold. Folks, here is a little bit of weather for you. We're going to come back and talk to Pete. I'm going to ask him what his answer is to ISIS. And he's not out of the Marines too long ago, so he's got a pretty good working idea of what we could throw at him. Kelly O'Connor, 643-523-1450 to call him. We're talking to Pete. We'll be right back. Hey, man.
Hey.
You having a good time?
Yeah, man. Sorry I was long-winded there, buddy. I was hoping you'd jump in and cut me off.
Well, it's helpful if you take a breath.
I tried to.
I would say I detected that you were not breathing. But, it's helpful if you pause a little bit, and then it's a more natural break.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
All right, man. How's it going, you think?
Wonderful, of course. How's Florida?
It's good, man. It's starting to get a little hot again down here. The winters are just beautiful, but then the summers are brutal.
Where are you living again?
Fort Myers.
All right. No. Fort Myers above, what do you call it, Venice or whatever?
Naples. The other Venice. Italian rip-off name. Yeah.
Well, so how do you like being on that side?
I mean, this side of the state?
Yeah, that side of the you know, that's a totally different ocean.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'll be honest. I think Miami is a beautiful place. I don't know, something more, I don't know, the climate just seems a little bit different there. It seems more, the air stagnant here.
Uh-huh.
You don't seem to get as much of a breeze.
Yeah.
It's just more of like a kind of a swamp feel over here.
Yeah, well, it's probably accurate.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, you really can't beat the weather in the wintertime. I mean, there's probably no place in the country that's as nice as it is here.
I don't know. I think L.A. is probably nicer, but that's just my But, hey, listen, you could be right, but we're about to come back on. I'm going to ask you about your opinion on what we should do with ISIS.
Yeah, okay.
Your phone is a little bit muffled.
You want me to try to take it off the speaker here? Let me see.
Yeah, dude, never. Get off speaker. Never go on speaker on the air. Sounds terrible. You ready?
Well, hold on.
What?
How does that work?
That's a lot better, man. Never go on the air on a speaker.
Yeah, I was in the car, so, yeah, all right.
All right, folks, we got Pete back here, and so Pete and I are old friends and kind of sparring partners on politics and stuff, but he's come around, he's seen the light on Islam, I guess, and Pete, let me ask you this, what would you suggest, what would you deviate from what we're doing on ISIS now, what would be your answer to ISIS?
Well, I would say that we have to come to the realization that it is a big problem, and it's a problem that can grow. And I don't really know if we're there yet. And we see them as being armed with YouTube and stolen weapons and stolen trucks. But the reality is there's a lot of Islamic organizations around the world who are now joining forces with them and pledging their allegiance to the caliphate, which should be concerning.
Well, I mean, I think you're a little bit behind on this. I'm looking at a New York Times article that says ISIS territory remains larger than many countries, and it traces the area where ISIS is in control from basically the border of Iran all the way over to Syria and all of Iraq, or a lot of Iraq, and it's absolutely giant now. We hear that Boko Haram has pledged allegiance, and that's in Africa. We hear that they've taken over Libya, that they've got the Libyan Air Force, and they're planning on bombing, believe it or not, Italy, and they're threatening the Pope, and they're claiming they're going to throw gay people off the tower, the Leaning Tower of Pizza, PIZZA, so they need a little bit of education as well. But, all right, so what would you do? I mean, the idea that we got to be careful, they might grow. I mean, they've already metastasized. They're a giant cancer, Pete. I mean, what do you think people on the left, are people on the left, have they come to grips with ISIS yet?
Well, I don't know if, you know, I listened to Bibi Netanyahu's address to the UN, and he acts like they're not that big of a deal. He thinks Iran is obviously much bigger of a deal than ISIS. So I was going off of his speech, I think it was last week. But I think here's the problem, here's a conundrum that we're in. I mean, ISIS, their obligation is to first destroy, they're Sunni, their obligation is to first destroy the true apostates to them, which are the Shia, the Iranians, and Bashar's regime in Syria. And you can see that's who they've been fighting. They're going after Bashar, they're going after other Shias in Iraq. And that's really the fight they're in. If the U.S. gets involved, and we always seem to do this, if we get involved, putting troops on the ground. Now I think they come to the realization that Bin Laden came to. It's this: they're never going to have success. They're never going to, you know, live without fear of being bombed if the U.S. is always in the picture. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them ramping up their campaign against us. You know, I think there were some predictions ISIS would be in Europe within 6 months after they came to power last summer. That was true. And they said another 3 to 6 months, you'll start seeing attacks in the U.S. I don't know how large scale those attacks will be, but it should be very concerning.
What would you do, Pete? I got to ask you, because we're running out of time here. I got to ask you, number one, what would you do? I'll save the second question, but what would you do if you're the president of the United States? Forget all of the history up to this point. What would you do? What, as a former Marine, what would you do?
Well, here's what you got to do. You got to get Saudi Arabia involved. You got to get the Jordanians involved on a much larger scale. They've been promising, you know, hell on earth, but they haven't delivered yet. You've got to get the Shias in Iraq and maybe even the Shias in Iran to realize the gravity of the situation. You've got to get the whole Middle East to say, you're either with us or you're against us. If you're against us, you're left to your own devices, because they have pledged to take you guys over. You got to form a coalition, and you got to start putting troops on the ground in cities like Mosul. You got to get in places
why
that they control.
Why haven't we done that up to this point? I find that this administration's approach to ISIS has been very puzzling, and you can't just say it's because these people refuse to defend themselves. They may be too dysfunctional to defend themselves. We may be the only army in the world that can really take these guys on.
Well, maybe so, but at least these guys have to put forth the effort. I think they've gotten a pass.
Who
so
says
many
that?
Times.
Pete, what if it was the Nazis? And does Poland have to stand up? And I mean, think about applying this standard to the Nazis. I find it to be false. I think we're not doing enough. We could be doing more.
Right. Well, and if you want to take the example of World War II, we still had the French Resistance that fought with us throughout the war.
That's a French Resistance. That's a French, Pete, that's a French underground. I think it's false to say that unless these people stand up. I know the president has said this, but I find it to be an unrealistic standard. I mean, what if ISIS was going to take over the world, but unless the local people stand up to him, we're not going to fight back? We got to have a higher standard than that, Pete.
Well, but these countries have to understand that there is no
treaty, there's no dealing with ISIS. Pete, who are we to tell these countries how to act when it's an international crisis that we, at some level, have been instrumental in helping create? I totally disagree with you. We got to go in as soon as we can and hit them as hard as we can. It's a humanitarian crisis, and if they take over huge areas of oil production, they're going to be they are already within the ability to have billions of dollars at their fingertips. All right, the second question is there such a thing? Is there really a difference between radical Islam and Islam?
I don't know. I don't know where it's for me to say, but these guys who profess to be members of the caliphate, nobody can stump them when it comes to their interpretation of Islam. So if nobody can stump them, and it's very easy for them to stump the moderate Muslims, for me, the question is pretty simple. It seems like their version of Islam is the correct version. Until someone proves this otherwise or has a debate with these guys or maybe goes on your reality show, right now, winner is ISIS. It's the caliphate as far as true interpretation, strict interpretation of Islam.
We do need a battle of the imams, and we need to put it on an island somewhere. And it'll probably get a little bloody over there, but I think it's a good reality show. All right, Pete, so anything else?
No, man. Good talking to you. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on the show, and I hope you have a great day. Talk to you later. Bye. All right, folks, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and finish up this hour. Ben Rossin is, in theory, on his way to the studio in his secret jet, his jet helicopter. We'll be right back at 6:54. It's Kelly here, and it's 6:57, and I think Pete was afraid. I hate to say it, but my old buddy was afraid to really state what he believes inside. I don't think he believes there is a difference between radical Islam and Islam. All right. You know, they're still planning on making a billion-dollar, 400-acre fake city in the middle of the southern New Mexico desert. I thought they'd given that thing up. All right. Other story, Senate passes bill to address Medicaid fraud allegations. And trying to see what else might interest you in the news cycle here. To work Senate panel tables bill. And there is a lawsuit that could stop PARC testing. PARCC, the testing that was being done, the pre-testing was being done during the snow day. New Mexico Senate panel has voted along party lines to stop the advance of a bill that prohibits requiring workers to join a union and pay dues. So Public Affairs Committee voted 5-3 Tuesday to table a measure that has drawn scores of people to the Capitol for hours of hearings. The vote blocks the bill after testimony has been given, and so got to find out what's going on with this bill, but it sounds like the bill that a lot of people felt was a very important one for advancing the economy is not going to take, not going to be put into place. So that is kind of interesting. I'll get some more info on that. All right. So thanks for tuning in. And I have Ben Rossin. The Rossin Report is coming up. And we're going to talk about what's going on in the city. It's pretty interesting. And they're calling for volunteers to help with the recall. I just got that information. They want, and I'll give you some more information as I get it. Take you out here. Some Floyd Kramer last day at Kelly O'Connell, 659 KOBE. You know, it's like breathe. Well, it just makes. I know, but I mean, it's like people don't understand. They think that the listener will hear that they don't take a breath, and so that they're like in charge and they're not afraid. And to me, it's terrible. The person never takes. I only have two. Kelly, good morning. 706 KOBE. I've got Ben Ross in here, but let me get through some of these headlines. Hillary Clinton has admitted to creating her own, basically her own email company that only had one, as far as I can tell, one user. She did it out of her house. I'm sure it was expensive, although they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars from their speech-giving engagements. Remember when the people got mad at Reagan for giving a $2 million speech in Japan? And they're saying what a sellout he was after he left office, and now, you know, Bill Clinton is worth hundreds of millions and nobody says anything. But there's an email that she created her, and they say that she took the emails that she wanted people to know about off her hard drive and then destroyed the hard drive. That's the implication of the New York Times. As you hear, there's an ISIS. ISIS is coming to a head in one of the cities in Iraq. There's going to be a big fight. Why can't we go in and just blow them to smithereens? Because we don't want to. That's the answer. All right. So you heard the conversation with my buddy Pete talking about Islam. We got a real problem now. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Patty Riley.
Citizen journalist Riley, what's going on?
Did you hear too about Hillary claiming that those emails were sent to Bill, and then Bill said he doesn't take emails?
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah, but it's just I think that people are numb because of all of the lies.
I think so too, and I think they're both trying to sell each other out.
Well, I mean, I think there's a little disinformation campaign going on too, that they've learned this trick that Putin uses, that if it's too hard to understand what's coming out of the government or out of the media, people tend to tune it out. They can't make sense out of it. And but do you think that Patty, do you think that Hillary has a chance of being elected?
Oh, no, she doesn't. And she doesn't have the women on her side. I'm sorry. I just don't think she does. They're trying to say she does, but she doesn't. It's a shame. She really needs to go home and knit a baby blanket or something for her grandchild.
Yeah, or she could knit a diaper for her head to celebrate all the money that she got from these radical Muslim countries that fight against women.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, y'all have a great day. I sent you an email.
Okay, thanks, Patty. Really appreciate it. All right. Anyway, I'm looking for any other headlines that you might find interesting. They've got drones now that are so tiny that you wouldn't believe it. And so they say all sense of privacy is now gone. The Godfather, Rahm Emanuel, could lose his reelection in Chicago. And some people are saying that's a shame because he's done a pretty good job. I have no idea. I just know that he was President Obama's enabler, which. All right. So we've got Ben Ross in here. And Ben, good morning to you.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for having me back on.
Thanks for coming in. I want to thank you for sponsoring the show.
Absolutely. I'm glad to do it. This is an important show that we need to keep here for local radio.
Well, I agree. Now, there was a little bit of outrage from the listeners when I mentioned that they were cutting me back to an hour. I haven't talked about it much since then, but I want to thank the listeners for, who called or sent letters or emails. That meant a lot. But I think, you know, Ben, we need a whether it's me or anybody else, we need a place for locals to talk about their city, you know, especially for the people on the right who don't seem to have a lot of representation here, the libertarians, and anybody else who wants to show up on the show. We need a place for them to be able to express themselves.
Kelly, that's absolutely right, and that's one of the reasons that I'm sponsoring the show through my company, Rawson Builder Supply. And if I may, I'll just give a quick plug.
Yeah.
We're having our big annual clearance sale this coming Friday and Saturday. So anyone who's in the market for doors or windows, hardware, garage doors, all kinds of other things, come on out. We'll have hundreds of windows and doors and things out there. So it'd be great to have people out there. Come take a look at what we've got, and we'll make a deal that you'll take the product with you. We don't want to put it back in our warehouse.
And just to let you know, some of what is going to, you're going to hear on the radio related to Ben is going to be Rawson Builder Supply, and some of it is also going to be information for the community. I've never heard anybody do this kind of a campaign before, so kudos to you for coming up with that strategy. And I think people need and want more information locally.
And that's the real thing that I'm here to talk about, which is the gross receipts tax increase. Every week I'll be coming on Wednesday at 7 o'clock to give what we're calling my Rawson report. And today I want to talk about the gross receipts tax increase.
Could you explain what a gross receipts tax is to begin with?
You know, it's similar to a sales tax, but it applies to more things. And the reason that we have a gross receipts tax is it allows taxing of government funds. So if the government goes in to build something, if the federal government builds something, then that money is taxed, whereas on a typical sales tax, it's not taxed. And so that's one of the big differences there. But it's basically a sales tax. In 2 weeks, 2 weeks from yesterday, the county commission is going to be voting on the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County, a 0.375% increase that's never been done before in the history of Doñana County. And the county gets the taxing authority from the state. And so the way that the county is able to do this is through the Hold Harmless legislation. And Kelly, I'm sure you've heard of it, and most of your listeners have as well. But it comes, and I'll give a brief history on it. It goes back to 2004 when the state exempted food and some medical services from gross receipts tax. And what they did in exempting that, everyone liked to call it a tax cut, but it really wasn't, because they increased the tax on everything else by 0.25%. It ended up bringing a net increase of revenue to the state, and the state then took a portion of that to give to the municipalities and the counties so that they would be held harmless from the loss of revenue from those two newly exempted categories. And so what they've done now, in 2013, they passed a bill to phase out that in a 15-year time frame. Let me back up a minute. Last year, the county received $1.8 million. $1.8 million is what we received last year from that Hold Harmless. Now, as this phase-out goes forward, this 15-year phase-out, the county's going to lose about $120,000. But those people on the county commission have found a way to solve that $120,000 problem. Kelly, you know what it is. They are proposing a $12.3 million tax increase to offset that $0.1 million that they're losing. And it's just unbelievable to me that they would use this loss in the Hold Harmless as an excuse for the largest tax increase in the history of Doñana County.
How much is that per person? I mean, we've got just got a couple hundred thousand people living in the county.
If you say we've got 200,000 and that's a good ballpark, that comes up to about $71.50 for every man, woman, and child.
That's incredible.
Yeah, for my family of five, that means for my family of five, that will be $357 each year.
I'm almost speechless. Why do these guys think they have the right to do this?
Kelly, it takes a lot to make you speechless.
I know.
You know that as the chairman and others have talked, they need more money. and that's where they're coming up with this, and this is what they're going to do. You know, there's a couple problems with that. Since from 2010 to 2014, the county raised spending by 31%. That's not sustainable. And now, Kelly, you know, they talk about, well, we need vehicles for the sheriff's office, and we need lots of other important things, pay raises for our staff.
Ben, the implication when they talked about that was that we didn't have the new vehicles for the sheriff because we didn't have the money. That was the implication.
That was, but that's not the case. It's because we've misused the money that we have, and we've increased spending in other areas while neglecting to take care of public safety, which is one of the priorities for any county government.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no bigger priority than safety. So what have they taken the place of safety? What have they spent money on?
Oh, Kelly, I've got several hundred pages. If anyone wants to look at it, I've got the budget for you. But there's a lot of silly little things that we're spending money on.
Such as?
Such as spaying and neutering pets. Such as doing studies for... we've got right now seven different studies going on as far as what's going to happen in the county. We need to consolidate these things. We don't need to have different entities producing the same or similar documents. We need to be smart with how we're spending our money, and that's not happening.
What about like some of the money that they've been putting into mass transit?
Yeah, absolutely. Last year we put in $84,000 into the mass transit system. And that's one of the things that they want this additional tax revenue to go to. After just hearing a couple months ago from voters, resoundingly by over 15%, saying, no, we don't want it, the county commission is prepared to vote to increase the taxes on the people to do exactly what the people just said they did not want done.
But this is this model, and I mean, if you want to apply to, for example, gay marriage was voted down by every single state that ever had a chance to vote on it, and the federales kept overturning this until the people finally, I guess, adapted to it. And I'm wondering if there's this kind of... It strikes me that Wayne Hancock and Billy Garrett are kind of hippies. I mean, the one is wearing an earring, and the other one is as progressive as you can get. Is it part of the hippie mentality to do what you want and tell the people that if they don't support it, they don't know what's good for them?
That may be the case, but a big part of it is they're both looking for things they can promise to people and give to people. And what they want is to give something to people out of other people's money. And that's the problem. And they don't see that they're taking this away. The gross receipts tax is a very regressive tax.
What is regressive? When people hear the term regressive tax, what does that mean?
Kelly, that means that it impacts those people that are living paycheck to paycheck a lot more significantly than it would impact you or me. You know, when we talk about $357 next year out of my budget that's going to this tax increase, I'll be able to live with that. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of people in our community that a $357 hit is a substantial hit.
Well, who's standing up for the taxpayers? Who's standing up for the people who've already voted? I mean, Ben, three times they were asked, three times they said no, and now they have to take it like a prison shower from these progressives on county commission. Who's standing up for them?
You know, Kelly, I am the only one. No, I take that back. Dr. Garcia also voted with me against taking this to a vote. So I really recognize and appreciate Commissioner Dr. Garcia for his work there as well.
Okay, give us a number or give us somewhere that people can express their concern, their outrage, their solidarity in standing up against this. Is there any chance that this won't pass?
There's a good chance it won't pass, Kelly. To do a tax increase, the county commission has to vote first on whether or not to take a vote, and that's what we did before. You have Dr. Garcia and I both voted against it, so we only need one more vote.
I've got a phone call here. Thanks for calling the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Anthony Cordova.
Anthony, how's it going? What's up?
Good morning. I just want to say thanks for getting Commissioner Ben Rossin on the line, on the show. When you said, who's standing up? You're standing up against this. He's standing up against this tax increase. I agree. You got to cut the spending or keep it within your budget.
instead of continuing to raise taxes, raise taxes, raise taxes.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a point, especially in a retirement community, where enough is enough. Anthony, I've got to take a break. Anything else?
I think it works the same way with increasing that minimum wage. The ones that were hurt the most are the ones on the fixed income, where prices go up because of all that, where people on a fixed income, the seniors, they can't have their income increased, especially if they did, then all their benefits would be cut. So
yeah, that's terrible. Well, thanks
for what he was talking about.
Anthony, thanks for the call, and I'm sorry I got to go to break, but we'll talk to you soon. All right, folks, talking to Ben Rawson and Anthony Cordoba. He sells insurance, and he knows about people and their budgets. Going to have him back on the show and do a show about working insurance into your budget. Here is Chet Atkins and Floyd Kramer, 1965. Floyd Kramer was nothing if not a fantastic studio player, so he's good in a combo. We'll be right back. 721 Kelly O'Connell Show. The problem is that people, and I think a lot of it has to do with nerves. People don't, there's a lot of people who don't understand. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hi, it's Betty Kelly. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Oh, just a quick question for Ben. And I really do have to go for right now, but ask him what the process for recalling county commissioners is.
Massive, but I'll ask him on the air. Anything else?
Great. No, I may be a little late at noon because I have a dentist appointment, so it depends on when I get out of there.
Okay. So thanks for the call, and I'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right, bye. Kelly here. I've got Ben Rawson on, and we're talking about the gross receipts tax. And somebody asked, what would it take to remove some of these people from office, the county commissioners? And I know it would be a gigantic struggle.
Kelly, you know, recall is very different from the city to the county. To recall a county official, you have to go through a judge, and the judge has to agree that there's a reason for a recall. So I'd like to stay away from that. You know, we need to focus on electing good people. We do have three of the county commissioners up for election next year, and we need good people to be running there. So for those of you out there that are upset about what's going on, search your souls and see if that's something that you'd like to run.
Let me ask you this. To the people who say, I'm a Democrat and I want to elect another Democrat to represent me on the county commission, what's your response to that?
You know, Kelly, on the county level, it's not party related. We're dealing with where to put in roads, how to deal with infrastructure needs, how to take care of the sheriff's department. These are not real partisan Republican-Democrat issues. What we need are people that are focused on good government, and that's really what the focus needs to be on, people that understand all the different issues and aren't just one issue related.
Do we have any idea why, when there's a vote, three votes on the tax increase and the people say no, that the county commission believes they have the right, the legal right, to bring it in?
You know, Kelly, I would say that's a very elitist mentality. It's a mentality of, you don't know what's good for you, so we're going to tell you what's good for you. And I have a real problem with that kind of attitude.
I do, too, and the same thing with the transportation. I am just, I was saying to you off the air, when you're dealing with a real elitist, they're more self-righteous than any minister or any evangelist ever could be.
They sure are, Kelly, and it definitely is frustrating.
It is frustrating, and I ran into Gil Sorg, you know, Gil Sorg's, I'm sure, a smart guy. He's got a degree in biology, and he's worked with for years, for decades, on endangered species. But, you know, just to have a simple conversation with him was like talking to Mr. Magoo. He seems so disoriented. Why did I want to ask him on the show? And I said, well, you know, you're getting criticized. You're coming up for a recall vote, probably. Why don't you come on and give your interpretation or, you know, your side of things? And he kind of sat there befuddled and said, well, I'll get back to you. And then he calls me up like 3 days, 4 days later and says, I've decided that's not in my best interest, my self-interest. And so we've got a group of people who think that they're operating on God's agenda, but it's not, you know, it's not really, it's religious, but it's not Christian. It's not Jewish. It is, they think that they're standing up for the universe. It is scary, but it's also kind of sad to see people that are so deluded.
You know, Kelly, and they're forgetting where that power comes from. Here in America, the power of the government comes from the people. And that's one of the reasons, Kelly, that every single week I am out knocking on doors. May not be a lot, but it keeps me in touch with people, and it reminds me that your listeners, Kelly, my constituents, are my employer in this position, and I need to be responsive to them.
And that idea is popular sovereignty. It means that the power that is given to officials is actually on loan, and it's vested in the people themselves. And just to hear about that, you know, that's the right way to look at power. It is not true that someone gets into power, into office, and can do anything that they want.
That's right, Kelly. Let me draw this back to the gross receipts tax, if I can, because one of the things that we talked about off air, too, is the fact that this is a double taxation. Many of your listeners will remember that it was less than a year ago that the city council implemented a 3/8% increase for the hold harmless legislation. So we've had this twice now. What that's going to result in, Kelly, is the tax rate here in Las Cruces is going to be 8.3175%. Over 8.3%.
How much will that cost people living in the city?
Oh, Kelly, that's a great question.
And so if you were going to pay how much for five people?
Five people, $357,
I think. So that's $700 out of a family of five living in the city. That's incredible. Some of these people that are in the – a lot of people that are in the city are blue-collar are not making a lot of money.
That's right, Kelly. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck, and $700 is a big hit on anyone's budget.
It's stunning. And when you go and talk to these people, what do they say to you? You say, I don't agree with this, and do they just laugh at you and say, poor little Ben, you don't understand?
Well, you know, the county commission is focused on they want to grow. And, you know, so here's the question I have. What will the community receive in exchange for this $14.3 million tax increase? What will the county receive? And the answer is, we don't know. We hear a lot of platitudes about we need vehicles, we need roads, we need pay raises for staff. I don't disagree with any of those. But Kelly, I'm a businessman. Show me the plan, and then I'll decide whether or not to fund it. Don't tell me to give you a $14 million check, and you're going to figure out how to spend it wisely. Because I don't have that kind of faith in the county commission.
Because they haven't spent it wisely before, because we're $25 million over budget.
We're spending $25 million more this year than what's coming in. You're absolutely right, Kelly.
523-1450. Are you going to go?
I'm going to take off. If there's any listeners, I'll hang around. If anyone's calling in, I'll hang around for a couple minutes to answer a question, but then I'll be out of here, Kelly.
Okay, here's a little more Chet Atkins and Floyd Kramer live. You can hear this guy. 7:30, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be back. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Pedro.
Pedro, what's going on?
okay on this piece they're talking about, I want to remind everybody about something.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, there was an inmate that sued the county for something like $14 million. And I just want to ask the county commissioners one thing. Was anybody fired? Did anybody get punished?
No, let's bring this on the air.
Oh, you're not on the air now?
No, just that's a warm-up for you.
Okay, sounds good.
In 45 seconds.
You want me to call back, Kelly?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Hold on. This is Kelly. Who's this?
Mr. Bora, I didn't get to hear who was speaking with you.
It is Ben Rawson.
And who is he, please? I'm turning this radio down. Sorry.
County Commissioner.
County Commissioner. Okay, I just wanted to hear because I didn't get to hear. Thank you.
Hey, who's this?
It's Anthony again. My luck called twice.
Yeah. I had told you I was going to cut you off because we were out of time. You got to listen. Hold on. Let me put you on hold, okay?
I want to talk.
Listen. It's Kelly. It is.
Hello, Kelly.
It is
good
Kelly
morning.
Here, and we've got. It's Kelly here. I've got Pedro on the line. Pedro, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Kelly, in reference to the proposed tax increase, which totally claws at me, I want to remind everybody in the county that a few years ago we had an inmate that was at the jail. They left him in there in solitary confinement. There was a case of total, complete negligence on the county. This guy ended up suing for upwards of $14 million and was successful. And I just want to remind everybody about that. But the bottom line is, was anybody ever fired? Was anybody ever punished over stuff like this?
That's a good question. We're here with Ben Rawson from the County Commission. He also owns Brawson's Building Supply. Ben, was there ever any punishment?
You know, Pedro, that's a great question. And the answer, disappointingly, is no. No one was ever fired for it. Nobody was ever punished for it. Now, I will tell you, Pedro, that was before my time. So I don't want to take too much credit for nothing happening on that. But it sure is disappointing because that was an enormous hit to the county.
Correct. And that's the kind of stuff I would like to point out. The other thing is they are arguing for the need for more money because of growth and there's more people and they need more of this and they need more of that. What people need to remember is when you're talking about a tax increase, it is a rate. And as the populations increase, their revenues increase. County Commission needs to make do just like everyone else does with the budget they're given in these hard and difficult times, and no new taxes, period.
Pedro, thank you. And you made an excellent point there that I'm going to repeat real quick, because that's as the population grows, the tax basis that the county is getting also grows. So you're exactly right on that. There's no blaming it on a population increase.
Thanks a lot, Pedro, for the call. Anything else?
Later out.
All right. All right, folks. And I've got to take a break here. We're going to go into weather. Are you taking off, Ben?
I'm out of here, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot, and have a good day. Ben Ross. And by the way, Ben, how do people get a hold of you?
You can call me on my cell phone at 575-649-4153.
And that Rawson's are having a sale. They're clearing the old inventory, and that's on Saturday?
Friday and Saturday, Kelly. Yeah, it's our big annual clearance sale. We've got all kinds of racking set up in our parking lot and everything else. It's going to be a terrific event.
And Rawson's Builder Supply is now sponsoring the show, so we're very grateful for that, Ben.
Thank you, Kelly.
All right, have a good day. Folks, we'll be right back. There's a little weather.
Southern New Mexico forecast.
Anthony.
Yes.
Hey, what's up, man?
I was wondering if I could call and hit on the HR
$390 and $391.
The what?
Those two bills, H.R. 390 and 391, one that was passed the House.
Look,
where a doctor has to notify parents.
Anthony, let's schedule a show, okay? Anthony, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Let's schedule a show on this.
All right.
All right, just come to my office.
Okay.
Thanks. It is Kelly here, and we just had Ben Rossin on, and Rossin doing the Rossin Report. Now, the problem that he brings up is, number one, you've got this, what he calls a regressive sales tax that has come in, number one, a regressive, meaning it's harmful to the least able to handle the burden are going to have to bear the hardest brunt of it. And that's one problem. The second problem is that it's already been voted on three times and rejected. Why does the county commission want to bring in a tax that the people have been asked about three times? So you don't have to know anything about the county commissioners who are pushing this, except to know that the people have voted on this three times, and the county commission still feels like they have the right to increase taxation. In addition to that, they're not even saying what the money's going to be spent for. In addition to that, there's $7 million in the black. $7 million more was taken in, supposedly, than needed. And although that does contradict this, I got to get to the bottom of this. One person told me there was $7 million more tax income in the county than there was spending. But then I know for a fact that there was $24 million overspending of the budget. So I got to get to the bottom of those figures and see what the $7 million represents. The third thing, though, is if you live in the city, you've already been charged for that. So if you live in the city, your payment is going to be massive. You're going to be paying over $100 a year, something maybe, I don't know, going off of Ben's Ben's calculations. He said a family of five in the county will be paying an extra $350. There's a lot of big counties around here, by the way. We're one of the most Catholic counties in the nation, and we are one of the we've just got a lot of big Hispanic families out here. That's massive. Expectation on one of the poorest areas in the country, the expectation that we're going to let these people, some of them very poor, pay for this. It's disheartening to think that the county commission is so caught up in its ideology, its ideas of what life is supposed to look like, that they would allow something like this to happen. I mean, they're bringing it to life, you know. It exists in the city. Now it's going to exist in the county. And a family of five is going to pay $700 or more to pay for this new tax. That's in addition to all the other taxes. So, all right. So I was contacted, and I don't have the number, but I was contacted by the people who did the recall. And I was told that they're asking for volunteers to help with the recall. Now, there, I think, are like 500 votes short, 500, pardon me, signatures short. And so that needs to be cured. And the cure is, you know, I've explained this before, but the term cure is a legal term that has to do with a shortfall, a shortcoming in your paperwork or something that you were supposed to do on a case. In this instance, the number of signatures for the ballot initiative, which the ballot is the recall of the three city councilors. Now, anyway, so I'll try to get that number for you, but they are looking for volunteers. So let me go back. Ben Rossin was here, and now he has stepped away. The big story today is the deleting, the destruction of the hard drive that had Hillary Clinton's official emails on it from when she was the Secretary of State. And it's really an extraordinary story. Some more headlines for you. Washington Post Jeb Bush-Scott Walker rivalry becomes defining matchup of Republican presidential race. California College becomes nation's first accredited Muslim university. Egyptian schoolboy beaten to death for failing to turn in homework. Wow. CNN is planning shows for a race and a Muslim, a race-oriented race comic Muslim activist. We got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, this is David Kelly.
Hey, David, what's up? Thanks for the call.
Hey, I think what they need to do is they need to sell this $250 million boondoggle because that already cost us $250 million. And then that money, once they sell the boondoggle, then, I mean, $250 million, that would last their $14 million for about 25, 30 years.
Well, let me ask you this. You're talking about the spaceport. It cost $250 million to build it, but it's like a car. What makes you think that you're going to sell a used car for a new car price?
Well, no, that's true. We're going to have to take a class from Dave Ramsey and figure out how to get out from underneath it. But, you know, like I said, like you said earlier, we voted on this three times. So I want to know who this clown Billy Garrett thinks he is, that he can just ramrod something down our throat that we've already voted against three times. Does he think he's turned into Obama or something? And what's this guy's background anyway?
Billy Garrett, let me do a little background for you. You know, the people that are running our city, many of them are from outside of the city. They've come to, what's his face? His name eludes me, but this guy, hold on one second. You called the Kelly O'Connell Show, put you on hold. These people coming in, I think that there is some sort of a national plan to send retiring leftists to small communities where they can run them, and I just find it so insulting. We have good leadership in the city, but the leaders potential leaders need to stand up, don't you think?
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. You know, these guys, you keep seeing this stuff where they keep complaining about these outsiders are creating this this recall. Well, the outsiders that are running this town, that's what's creating the recall. So, they're, you know, they come in, like you said, they're outsiders. Gil Sorg's not from here. Perdoza's not from here. Half the people in the county aren't from here. And so I don't know why they come here, and now all of a sudden they want to turn us into where they left. It's you know, just get out. Go away. We can run ourselves. So it's very frustrating.
Well, you know, Billy Garrett, I've had him on the show before. He's pleasant enough, but where's the earring? You wear an earring when you're an older male because you want people to know you're progressive or you're hip or whatever. The saddest thing in the world to me is listening to the speeches of far leftists and their tax and plan fantasies and knowing it's going to crash and burn every time. It's like these people are so caught up in their own genius that they're absolutely immune from studying history or paying any attention to logic.
They can't make anything logical work in their brain because, you know, it doesn't work that way with them.
You've called in the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll be right back. Yeah.
No matter how long it is, they're convinced in their own head that what they did was just, you know, that it'll work out. It'll get better.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll only be broken for a while. It'll eventually get better.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with it. I agree with you 100%. And I mean, look, you claim to be a city leader and you care about your people. Back off the taxes. We're poor. We don't need more taxes to make a model city. We want a livable city that where people can make money and keep the money that they earn.
I mean, if they want to do something to make this a better city, why don't they bring in some industry that will give better jobs, will pay better jobs? I mean, there was a call center here last year that tried to come to this town, and they couldn't come here because they couldn't get enough qualified people. So they ended up going to El Paso.
That's just you know, infuriating to hear that kind of thing.
Yep.
I've got two other callers. Thanks for the call.
Okay,
David, have a good day. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, how are you today?
Good. Who's this?
My name's Tom.
Tom, what's up?
Kelly, this is just a perfect example. We lost our Keisha. I'm not sure about Wayne. I know that it's great people, but they don't have any experience in the private sector. Billy Garrett came from New York City working for, I think, the federal government there for 30 years, retired, came here, and now he's a politician. Leticia, she's a retired county employee, so is her husband. great people, but they don't understand what it's like to be in the private sector. We've lost our representative government.
And, Tom, they don't listen. Tom, they do not listen.
No, they don't listen. And but like you said, they have this elitist attitude. They've been in these bureaucracies, and now they're politicians. They've never known what it's like to live in the private sector. When I first started working for the federal government, I was a state employee. When I came $20,000 under budget, which I thought that was a great thing, any of your listeners out there that have worked for the federal government understand this. So I came $20,000 under budget and was reprimanded for it. And so you don't ever do that again.
Shocking.
That's our government today.
That's sad. That's very sad. Well, I appreciate the call. I've got another caller. Anything else?
That's it.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Tony.
Tony, thanks for the call. What's up?
Hey, one of your callers talking about people coming from the outside, trying to change this place. I find that offensive, man, because I'm from out of here. I'm not from here. And, you know, I'm an American, so I should have a right to come here. And if I see things I don't like, of course I'm going to try to change it.
All right. But, Tony, what about this? People coming in from outside bringing alien theories, far leftism with them. What about that?
Well, that's a national movement anyway. And, yes, we do have to fight that every step of the way, because you see that all over this country where people are coming from other countries trying to turn this country into a dump. I mean, you got illegals coming in from Central America and Mexico. You've got Islam coming in here trying to make this a Sharia law country. Yes, those things we have to fight. But some ideas that people come here with aren't all that bad.
I know, but so you got to say that these people that are coming in with this tried and failed Marxism or communism or socialism, whatever you want to call it socialism for lack of a better word. It's failed elsewhere. It's failed in history. Don't bring that garbage here. Don't turn this place into a dump.
I agree. I agree 100%. But we also, in this area, I've been here over 20 years, and I see this victim, we're poor, we can't afford anything mentality that you have to give to me. I see that, and I don't buy into it, because I was an educator in the Gadsden District for 18 years, and I saw all these kids getting freebies, and yet they had better cell phones than I had, and their parents were driving better vehicles than I had.
I agree 100% that we gotta up our own standards. But look, how about this? They're going to tax you twice on they're gonna create what, $20 million in taxes to replace $100,000 in lost taxes, and we're all just gonna swallow it. What's your response to that?
And that's the problem, is we do swallow it. You see, right now I'm having this big debate with my wife whether I'm going to file taxes or not, because I'm tired of my money going to other people and going to causes I don't believe in. That's one of the reasons I left the teachers union. You know, you want my money, that's fine. I could use your protection, but your politics suck.
Okay, but I'm going to ask you this. You came from outside, but it doesn't really matter to me. I agree. What does matter is your ideas. Are they American or not? Are you willing, though, to stand up at the county meeting and tell these guys you're not going to double tax me?
Of course. I mean, I'm a vocal person. I've written letters all over the place. They got me nowhere. But the trouble is, they have these meetings when people like myself have to work for a living.
Yeah, no, I got you. Listen, we're running short on time. Was there anything else?
No, it's all good. I'll talk to you later, man. Gotta work.
I got you. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, here's a little more, and we got another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? All right. Must have missed him. If you're called in and you want to talk, call back. We're running out of time, but here's a little more. Chet Atkins, Floyd Kramer will be right back. Thank you. Kelly here, and all right, so looking a little bit of Sun News reporting here, and we do have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, morning, Rob.
Rob, good morning to you. What's up?
So that ad you just ran, or that ran during your break there, did you hear that?
I was actually playing the piano, so I wasn't listening.
So apparently they're going to have Peter from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, yeah,
and
one of their
advertising points is that he was celebrating however many years of social activism.
Oh, really?
That kind of stuff. And they're giving discounts to the NMSU students. So they're trying to, you know, carry their 60s revolution into the students of nowadays, and they're doing it through the community civic centers, you know? Isn't that ridiculous?
Well, I don't, yeah, I guess. I don't, maybe it's Puff the Magic Pothead, you know?
Who knows? Good
All
Lord.
Right, Rob. Thank
yeah, but
you.
That's what's running the city, you know, that kind of mentality.
Yeah, well, that's true. All right, so anything else?
No, have a good morning.
You too. All right, feel free to call in and criticize the advertisers. But what was I saying? Yeah, I was playing the piano. I was playing a little bit of I Can't Stop Loving You, which is one of the classic country songs, isn't it? So anyway, we've got a situation here. We've got a recall. That recallers are asking for volunteers to come in and walk the city streets and get the appropriate number of signatures. So I'll get the contact number for that for you tomorrow if I can remember it. And So lots of stuff going on out there. I don't see anything that exciting here. What do you think about selling the spaceport, though? That would be kind of shocking, wouldn't it? It's never been used, though, has it? And, all right, so if you want a redux of the show, Blog Talk Radio, Kelly O'Connell, all of my shows are in there. You can go back and... Pick up a copy, download the shows. Hopefully you'll be able to find them by name. going to take you out of here with a little more Chet Atkins. I tell you what, I'll play you a little of my version of Can't Stop Loving You tomorrow. I'll work on it a little bit tonight. I don't know what there is. Something about facing the screen and the equipment for the radio and then turning around and jumping on a piano and banging out. I don't know why. I could play a song right 100 times, but when I kind of jump over there, for some reason, it's like you don't have a chance to warm up. Anyway, here is, but I'll play that for you tomorrow. Chet Atkins, Floyd Kramer. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for listening in. Ciao.